I'm Nick Spitzer. This is American Roots, this hour of the program devoted to South Alabama musical sounds and related styles that influenced our guest, piano man Chuck Lavelle, who played with the Allman Brothers and still backs the Rolling Stones. In a minute, we'll hear the soul song She's All I've Got by Freddie North. Chuck Lavelle played on it as a youthful piano prodigy in the Muscle Shoals, Alabama recording scene. First, though, one of my favorite Muscle Shoals sides from Laura Lee, a Detroit native who also sang gospel. A song from 1967 was recorded at Fame Studios. Uptight Good Man on American Roots.
I want a good
She could kiss the ground in the wintertime and make a flower grow.
Freddie North, She's All I Got. A song co-written by Gary U.S. Bonds and Jerry Swamp Dog Williams. Recorded near Muscle Shoals. And it crossed over from R&B to Top 40. And then Johnny Paycheck covered it for country audiences. Chuck Lavelle, who we'll talk to in a moment, played on the record as a teenager. Pianist Chuck Lavelle grew up in a musical family that hosted community house parties. He went on to play keyboard and guitar in local Tuscaloosa bands, including an integrated one. Barely 20, Lavelle ended up in Macon, Georgia, where the Allman Brothers Band and their label Capricorn Records were creating Southern rock. After a few jam sessions, Lavelle was officially invited to join them. He later formed his own group, Sea Level, and would play with Eric Clapton, George Harrison, Dr. John, the Rolling Stones, with whom he's toured and recorded since 1982. But we began talking about another important piano player in Chuck Lavelle's life, his mother, Frances.
She played for family enjoyment. We had a nice little console piano in the house, and I used to just love to listen to her play, and she would encourage me to make something up, and that's how it all began.
Sounds like you had a pretty hip mama there.
I certainly did.
Think of the Allman Brothers. There is sort of an image that it was a tough bunch. I don't mean to stereotype it, but you had the Ramblin' Man, the Midnight Rider, the motorcycles, of course, the sad loss of a brother and all those things. And I just wonder, how did you feel like you fit into that world? And is it inappropriate to look at the Allmans and the whole ensemble as kind of hard-nosed rock and roll with all of its associations?
Well, you're absolutely right, Nick. You know, they had that kind of tough guy image, and they lived edgy, and it was very different for me, but nevertheless, it was all about the music, man.
Sometimes I feel
no matter what their image was or how they were perceived, the music was amazing. The Allman Brothers Band really invented a whole new genre, bringing all these different factions in with blues and jazz and gospel and rock, and it just created its own style, really.
Lord, I feel like I'm dying.
You know, I'm looking at the a legendary album cover from 1973, the Allman Brothers Band, Brothers and Sisters. I'm scrutinizing this photograph. Will I find you in this photograph of this extended family of people somewhere?
You know, when you open it up and you're looking a little bit to the left, you see a guy in a black leather jacket with hair a little past his shoulders, parted in the middle, and a beard, and that's me.
Yeah, there's nobody with hair down below their shoulders and a beard in this picture, Chuck.
You know what I'm talking about now. By the way, this song for you, sincerely me.
What was the scene like in Allman Brothers tours for you?
Of course, we were traveling all over the country. Big, big crowds. You know, we're talking about 30, 40, 50,000 at a time. The band was known very much like the Grateful Dead for playing long periods of time. We'd do 3.5-hour sets. But we were having a blast, man.
Thank you.
tell me a little bit about the evolution that takes place where you end up creating C-Level and evolving out of the Allman Brothers.
During the years of the Allman Brothers Band, I got to be close with J-Mo, the drummer. And, of course, Lamar Williams had come in after Barry Oakley had his tragic accident. So the three of us started a little side group called We Three. It was really J-Mo that was influencing us to listen to jazz and turned us on to artists like Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock and Coltrane and Miles Davis. And when the brothers finally temporarily disbanded in 1976, the three of us kind of stood in a room and looked at each other and said, well, what if we continue it and maybe experiment with it?
In all this, you were still building a home life back near Macon with your wife, Rose Lane. And tell me a little bit about the forest and the plantation that you ended up living on together and working over these years.
I met my wife, Rose Lane, because she was working at the record company at Capricorn Records. During our courtship, you know, I'm unbeknownst to me, Nick, I'm dating the farmer's daughter. I go down there, nervous as you can imagine. I even asked Rose Lane, I said, should I cut my hair? Should I shave my beard? You know, she said, no, just go be yourself. It'll all be fine. And it was. They would show me around the farm. It was just so obvious that they had this deep passion for the land and respect for the land. That began to rub off on me. And then in 1981, Rose Lane's grandmother passed away, leaving her about 1,000 acres of land. Well, what do we do with it, you know? My brother-in-law said to me, if you're not going to plant crops, you might think about planting trees on it. Well, it's a long-term deal. You put them in the ground, and some 12, 15, 17 years later, you get a thinning, and you go on, and, you know. I became fascinated by this, and the first thought I had was, where does your instrument come from? It comes from the resource of wood, you know? So I started studying forestry, and we began to move forward in managing our land for forests, long-term forest interests.
This is American Roots. I'm Nick Spitzer talking to Chuck Lavelle. As you're building this life in the woods, you're also finding yourself recording with and touring with the Rolling Stones. How did that happen in the middle of all your, you know, return to land and being in a family and all these things? It almost seems like it's a fork in the road.
When Rose Lane inherited this land and we were considering what to do with it, my musical career was not doing so well. The phone wasn't ringing for recording sessions. You know, I went to Rose Lane one day and I said, listen, I've been thinking about this. I'm not saying I want to quit music, but, you know, maybe I should just let that go and just follow this passion for forestry and the land and learn more and more about it. And she listened very patiently to me, and she said, well, I understand, and that's all good and fine, but guess what? You had an interesting phone call today from the Rolling Stones. Well, that night, I get a call from Ian Stewart. A lot of your fans will know that Stu was an integral part of the Stones. He was actually a founding member, played the piano. I'm talking to Ian Stewart on the phone, and I said, well, this is flattering. I'd love to come for an audition. I've got a little club gig this weekend. Can I come Sunday or Monday? And Stu said, we'd really like to have you there tomorrow. It took me a while to feel like I was fitting in, Nick, because, you know, English humor has its own unique thing going on, and I had to go and study Monty Python films, you know, to really finally get it. But it's so much fun to be with them. You know, they're four totally individual people, but together, they're the Rolling Stones.
recent recording, Back to the Woods. You pay homage and respect to all these great piano players. And you're digging into people like Leroy Carr and Little Brother Montgomery.
This was such an interesting and fun project because they were the precursors to, shall we say, Little Richard or Jerry Lee Lewis. What I wanted to do was to bring it forward and modernize it and show how these guys have influenced me and others like me.
And you had a little bit of help on some of the recordings from Keith Richards.
Keith graciously played on Evening Train, which is a Leroy Carr tune, and he played on Boots and Shoes, which is a Otis Spann tune. I've been working with John Mayer over the course of the last year, recording with John. He's a fabulous, fabulous artist, and he also played in Boots and Shoes. So when you hear Boots and Shoes, you get both Keith Richards and John Mayer on the same recording. And a wonderful R&B singer that I'll bet some of your listeners remember, Candy Staten.
Oh, yeah, you've got her on The Blues Is All Wrong. That's wonderful to hear her voice, a woman's voice in this mix.
I was blessed to have all these musicians and artists come together, and it was just a blast to make.
Well, this song composed, the blues too tight. Got the blues tune, but the words are right. It's all right. This song's all right.
It looks like it's made entirely out of something that came from the forest.
Well, thanks for noticing that. Yeah, all of my records are what we call digipacks. That's cardboard or paper products. The elements of plastic that hold the disc in place is made from recycled plastic. So, you know, a lot of artists these days are paying attention to these things, and I think it's a very important thing to do.
Chuck, you're a great cultural citizen. I want to thank you for taking care of your family. You're a tall tree in the forest, and I want to thank you for banking all that great rock and roll over the years.
Thank you so much, Nick. It's really been a pleasure.
Piano player and tree farmer, Chuck Lavelle. His book, Growing a Better America, describes his environmentally friendly plans and what bands like the Stones and Pearl Jam are doing to offset their tour's carbon footprints. Gotta love it. Cultural creativity and natural conservation. Roots is back in a minute with Alabama's Hank Williams and Shelby Lynn, as well as some country rock music from Chuck's colleagues, the Rolling Stones.